Are we ready to talk about mediocrity and superiority? Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we've got our resident Marvel expert, Mark Sherman, back in the house. We talk about Luke Cage and how great it is. And then we talk about Iron Fist.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Hello, I am Tim Wick.
And Nick Glover. And Nick sounds that awful because he is thinking about our subject today, but we will first introduce our guest, the only, the one, I did that backwards, Mark Sherman.
Hello.
Damn it, Mark. That was a very exciting intro for you.
Well, I felt I didn't want to bring people up too much to then get them over the top.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
And see, his intro was made better by contrast comparison to the previous.
Now that is very on topic because we have Mark, who, as you all know, dear listeners, is our resident Marvel expert guest.
That's right. And he's a resident. He's been in my house since the last episode.
I know.
Get out.
Arguably, it's not been that long yet.
I will say he does a great job vacuuming your floors, though. It looks cleaner than ever. But we're here to talk about the amazing Luke Cage, the travesty that is Iron Fist. And no, I'm not being hyperbolic, motherfuckers. I really think that a Luke Cage was fucking amazing and that Iron Fist was a travesty of possibilities because there was so much potential.
It is a delightful boardroom drama. I have no idea what
Yeah, I really loved characters that don't grow and super skinny women.
It was really great to watch a series that was all about the troubles of rich white people. I felt like I was learning something new about the difficulties of being rich and also being a sort of superhero.
Now, before we get into this, I think that it's important that we take each on its merits. And how about this? Instead of on its merits, let's take each individually, and then I'd like to do some comparison. So first off, we're just going to go around the table, starting with Nick going around here. What was your initial reaction? What are your thoughts, your overarching thoughts on Luke Cage? Show Luke Cage.
In short, I was despite some pacing issues and some problems with kind of a change up in the villains at one point that I kind of threw off the pacing a little bit for me. I thought that it was amazing and powerful, and had a lot to say. And there's also, I think it's worth noting that there's something inherently political about a bulletproof black man in a hoodie.
Absolutely.
That is important
and
needed.
Yeah, that costuming choice was not accidental.
Not one bit.
And name checked like 5 times in the series.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Mark, what do you think?
I mean, I thought it was great. I think it did an awful lot of things for the superhero genre in terms of film and cinema that we don't even really get in the comics quite as much as I think that we should. There was a lot more representation there of a wide spectrum of things that we don't get. And it was interesting seeing, in a lot of ways, this type of a genre is filtered through a perspective that isn't really remarked upon in comics, because I think it allowed them to do a lot more interesting things and tell newer kinds of stories until they got a little bit, you know, comic booky at the end.
That's fair. All right, Tim, hit me.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. It stumbled a little bit. I think it was a bit of a challenge was the length. I think they weren't quite sure what to do in the middle. I did feel, you know, we should mention, even though this thing's been out for months, we're going to spoil the shit out of it.
Yeah. I just assumed that our listeners would know that by now.
Yeah, they should. They should. I think that they took a risk when they killed off one of the most compelling characters in the show.
Which one?
Cottonmouth.
Yes.
And I'm not certain that risk paid off. In that I think that it hurt the conclusion of the entire thing by introducing a villain that was in fact not anywhere near as compelling in my mind.
Honest to God, I'm just going to say it's been so long since I've seen this. So I remember Cottonmouth dying. Who did they introduce after?
Diamondback.
Right.
Well,
right.
And arguably he's not even the primary villain at a certain point. Shades, that slimy motherfucker he was, of all of our fallback villains, he was probably the best, but they handed us a whole deck of cards full of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did I recognize him from? He was in something recently where he played a nice
Sons
guy.
Sons of Anarchy.
Sons of Anarchy. He played a nice guy in Sons of Anarchy.
Who gets the shaft
the traitor who kills himself, right? Yeah.
One of the characters.
God damn it. We didn't mention spoilers for Sons of Anarchy, Molly.
One of the characters.
Sorry, not sorry.
Finds out that he is of mixed ethnicity and uses that information to blackmail him into narking on his.
So, again, brothers. And this is something that I want to. This circles back to what I want to say about Luke Cage and why I loved it. And yes, I do understand this is a white woman telling you all why this is so great racially. But, like, truly, this had the biggest cast of non-white and mixed characters that I can remember ever seeing that wasn't a period piece set in Harlem or something, like where like the whole point was everyone's black.
Yeah.
The whole point isn't that everyone's black in this. It just coincidentally was that like the majority of the people, the movers, the shakers, the good and the bad, that we saw people who were on both sides. A lot of times you'll see all the bad guys are black, or all the good guys are, but the bad guys are white, or whatever it is. And this was not set up in some kind of like us against them, however you define the us and the them. It felt very much realistic in terms of what Hell's Kitchen might be in the modern times.
It was diverse in a more realistic way. And I think, you know, yeah, we're a bunch of white people standing around talking about, sitting and talking about diversity. But at the same time, you know, we mentioned it when we were talking about Wonder Woman. Representation matters.
Yeah.
That was a show that was within the larger framework of the Marvel television universe and the Hell's Kitchen universe that took representation seriously, which I thought was important. And
it's great too, considering the history of the comic being and its creation at a time period when it was really invented as, boy, blaxploitation cinema is doing really great.
You know what, I bet we'll make us some money.
How about we introduce a black superhero that patrols the streets of Harlem?
Yeah, and his whole deal is that, like, he's invincible black guy who can, like...
He went to jail.
Oh, don't forget, because he's black.
Reform.
Yeah. Well, and that, let's be fair, is totally fucking realistic.
Hey, one of his first appearances in comics was, I believe, was slapping Dr. Doom and asking him where his money was.
Ooh.
That's legit. That's
Jesus
not
Christ,
that's
the 70s.
That's not like a parody. That literally happened in Marvel Comics.
So my introduction to Luke Cage, comics wise, I want to get into some comic stuff here and as much as we can here. My introduction was in relation to Jessica Jones. Yep. Specifically, I didn't really know much about Luke Cage until I read the
Alias
comics, which the Jessica Jones series is based off of. And we've talked a little bit about that when we talked about Jessica Jones. So that's my main experience with him. And then I never read Defenders. I never read Luke Cage's books on his own. When there's some Avengers stuff that he's in, because when Jessica Jones, he leads the new Avengers, and then he's in Thunderbolts too, isn't he?
He leads the Thunderbolts.
Yeah, yes,
wasn't that before the new Avengers stuff?
He's led. The Thunderbolts a couple times.
Yeah,
it was a few.
So my experience with him has all been team based, or he's a secondary character.
Yeah.
You know, he's Jessica Jones's fuck buddy. He's the guy that
husband.
Well, eventually, they do. So that is something in the comics
for a while.
So this is where I'm getting at, actually, is and I'll start. But like, what's something from the comics, if you're aware? And I know, Tim, you don't read a ton
of
them, but just, you know, maybe you can even put this in as like, what are you hoping happens? How's that? Like, what from the comics are you hoping happens, or what are you hoping happens with Luke Cage going forward? For me, it is I genuinely hope that they do the true relationship with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, where they are in love. They are a good married unit. I mean, as much as any marriage is, they talk to each other, they support each other, and they eventually have a baby together. And yep. I think that would be a really cool thing to see in the MCU.
Although the conclusion of the Luke Cage series would suggest that's not right around the corner.
I concur with that.
He seems to be in a really, I don't know if we say healthy relationship, but a comparatively healthy relationship when you're talking about superheroes.
With the night nurse.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to Tim first just because he doesn't have the comic source material as much as you two do. But like, Tim, what are you hoping to see from Luke Cage going forward?
I don't know.
What do you want to see from the character?
In the Defenders or wherever.
The thing that interested me the most about the series was the change in the character played by Viola Davis, and I don't remember character names.
Black Mariah.
Yeah, the Ryan way Dillard. The way Dillard. She kind of goes from being shady but not necessarily dangerous,
right,
to shady and quite possibly extremely dangerous. I'd be interested in seeing the progression of that character to being a more kingpin level type of villain.
And Diamondback is her brother, right?
Cottonmouth was her cousin.
Cousin, that's right. So when Cottonmouth dies, that galvanizes.
Sister and brother.
Yeah, they were.
The actress is Alfre Woodard.
Sorry, Alfre Woodard. I'm sorry. I know the difference. I'm sorry, listeners.
You know, we're just a bunch of white people trying to do our best here on this podcast. And, you know, we all saw Luke Cage, like, what, 5 months ago?
So
I just want to say, we didn't rewatch it before this. So if we make mistakes,
I think it was like during Fest.
We trust you geeks to correct us very, very geekily.
Pedantically.
Yes.
Same thing.
Mark, what are you looking for from Luke Cage in the comics?
You know, honestly, the thing that I'd be most looking forward from the series is developing Luke Cage into more of the leader that you get out of him. You know, right now he's still very much in the mode in the series of being personally invested, but only just starting to take responsibility for the powers that he has, and he's becoming less selfish in his own motivations. And I'd like to see him take more ownership of it. Because even in the original comics, one of the things that he did is he owned the neighborhood that he lived in, but he always stepped up. And again, we got towards that at the end of the series, but it took a while to get there. There was a lot of hiding. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'd just like to see that expanded.
Sure.
Nick, hit me up.
Yeah. So, like Mark was saying, some of the leadership stuff, I would really love it if maybe after Defenders, season 2 of Luke Cage is Heroes for Hire.
Misty.
You get Luke and you get Misty Knight, and, you know, maybe we get Claire, Night Nurse.
Colleen Wing.
Colleen Wing, most definitely. Steal her from Iron Fist.
Iron Fist.
And
but, we also get Iron Fist.
Shang-Chi.
Yeah, Shang-Chi would be dope. But another thing that I would really love to see is Luke Cage redeem and make the Danny Rand character tolerable and likable and worth watching, because I really feel like those two characters in the comics, the show hasn't portrayed this. In the comics, those two are best fucking friends. Yeah. They are like bosom buddies, inseparable. They always have each other's back, and they get along really well. Mm-hmm. And I hope, like Molly, you're saying, the relationship with Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
I hope his relationship with Danny flourishes, and that we'll get to Iron Fist, but like, there's some shit there that needs to be fixed. And I think Luke Cage could be one of the ways by which you fix Iron Fist.
Sure.
So let's go, if we can remember, anything you didn't like. I think all four of us have mentioned pacing issues. But what was it about Iron Fist that maybe left you a little meh? And also, you can roll into that. Where would you rate it in with all the other shows? And I'll start to give you guys some time to think, because I've been thinking about this for a while. I feel like I do agree that the a big problem was pacing. I felt that this was one of the few that we didn't, one of the first that we didn't binge with Mark, yeah, where we didn't have Mark over just to try to binge as much as we could have of it. And I think a big part of that was we could already tell from previews and trailers that it was going to be a little slower paced and a little slower burn.
And early reviews came out for it and started poisoning that well.
That's yeah. true. Yeah. That's true. I felt like, I thought that they, while I appreciate that they were really setting up his, I guess, reluctance, we'll say, to like become this hero and his feeling of like, I just got out of prison and I need to keep my head down, almost Shadow Moon and American Gods style.
Okay.
Like, I just want to live my life and I don't
fuck with those bitches.
I didn't ask for this kind of a thing. Yeah. Yeah. And like, and so I get that. And I think that they spent a little too much time on the slow burn of Luke Cage realizing that he's the hero that Hell's Kitchen needs. He's what we need right now, and that he actually needs to come out of the shadows and do more. But I really felt like some of the writing was amazing, but some of the direction not ham-fisted. I don't know what word I'm looking for. Clumsy, I guess, maybe, or like it didn't feel as polished or as intentionally raw as some of the other shows might have.
I mean, I think to a degree some of that might be stylistic choices.
Agreed.
As in a lot of ways, they were trying to make a blaxploitation film. It was very genre conscious.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I just don't know that it was maybe terribly genre savvy.
Mm.
That's a good way to distinguish it. That's a really good distinction. Nick.
That was quite possibly the smartest thing anybody's ever said on this podcast.
it's up there. The villain change.
Mm.
Cottonmouth was so fucking good. And Black Mariah is so great and so compelling, and to see her transformation, like, it's her origin story as much as it's Luke Cage's origin mm-hmm. story. Like, she the fucking kingpin of Harlem. I mean, she could be great. Diamondback, his goofy powered suit costume thing was straight out of the comics.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. one of the times where you don't do something straight out of the comics.
Yep.
Yep.
Because it looked like, remember that the Spock helmet from the Star Trek toys that has never appeared in Star Trek ever for the original? Like, it looked like a police siren on a hat that a kid could wear. It was like a shitty cash-in Star Trek toy that's kind of renowned for that. I felt like his costume was like that. It looked goofy to me. I thought he's the baddest, sickest psychopath to ever live. And I was just like, yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. And
he's the Joker. We should be afraid. Like,
but also he's like Luke Cage's half brother or something in the end.
Yeah,
it
was just that
like,
was weird.
It was just like they could have left him out completely and finished the series with Cottonmouth dying and Mariah like
going for revenge,
Luke.
Tim, go for it. Because I kind of, my weakest thing is kind of on par with Nick's. I thought the moment at which Cottonmouth got super compelling, because the episode when we see his backstory and we see
absolutely.
Him as somebody who is reluctant to enter that dark criminal underworld, that wasn't what he wanted. That
the music.
He wanted to be a musician, and he's forced to kill the one family member that supported that piece of him that was so important to him. And it's like, this is an episode where we are getting to the heart of what makes this guy interesting.
Yeah.
And then they kill him. And
that's a really
even
good point.
Even if Mariah's reasons for killing him were super compelling, and I, you know, that growth for that character was interesting as well, I would have rather have seen them save that, because then they were stuck with going with Diamondback, and I wasn't as interested in Diamondback. And I also felt like there were a few fights where Cage would get the upper hand with Diamondback, and Diamondback wasn't wearing no superpowered suit. And I didn't understand how it was that Diamondback came back walking around in better shape than Luke Cage in the next episode. And I thought, like, Diamondback ought to take a couple of lumps, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's, we know it is an unbalanced power set. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Diamondback needs to use these weird ass bullets to hurt Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And so that kind of bugged me a little bit, even though I loved the concept of it's really hard to hurt Luke Cage, but about the worst thing you can do to him is like shoot him with a bullet that can get through his skin, because then you can't get it out.
Yeah. See, one of my favorite things from the comics is when
his heart.
Who is it? Oh. It's the guy with the power of 1,000 exploding suns.
Sentry.
So Sentry gets the black goo in him.
Yeah.
And he somehow
complicated.
It's complicated.
He explodes and it gets into a bunch of people. And one of the people it gets into is Luke Cage. And they can't get it out, because they can't do surgery.
Right.
And they can't do anything.
Yeah.
Because it's, and they show like scalpels breaking as they're trying to
Stephen
like,
Stephen Strange is doing it too.
Stephen
Strange, he's operating
on Stephen
him or
Strange
trying to.
Is like every, and so that I love, and I don't remember, where did Diamondback get those MacGuffin bullets? Does anyone remember?
Okay. Hammer, isn't it?
They're Hammer Tech, and they're based off of like, recovered Chitauri metals from the initial New York invasion.
Which I enjoy.
Avengers
I enjoy
movie.
As well, the way Marvel relates everything. I was like, that's nice.
You know, and I really like that tie-in too, except the one thing about Luke Cage where it really showed its budget was anytime they mentioned any technology that was not real. Yeah. Those bullets looked fake as fuck.
Yeah.
That Justin Hammer suit that he was wearing at the end of it looked like Starship Troopers cosplay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
the helmet was kind of, the visor on the helmet was just.
And it reeked of like leftover props that they spray painted a different color from some other show. And
But it was like straight out of the panels.
It really was.
Bad choice.
What did you think was the weakest?
Honestly, the whole thing with Diamondback was weak. I think it was unnecessary, and I think it was shoehorned in solely so they could give Luke Cage an enemy to fight at the same power level. But the problem is that Luke Cage isn't about being superpowered and fighting people that can knock down other buildings. Luke Cage is being a powerful person who is doing things for his community. He's using that power effectively and
responsibly.
And honestly, it's a gentle use of his power. It's a scalpel, not a hammer.
It's why he and Jessica Jones always got along, I always felt. Was like, they're not hiding, but it's more, or I guess he's not hiding, she is hiding, but he's kind of like, you can just be who you are and still help without being like up there in the sky with the fucking Avengers. Like you can help in small ways.
I understand you need to establish some way, because if Luke Cage is bulletproof and super strong and he's just going up against ordinary people, it's like, well, he's never going to lose. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's ever going to beat him is his inability to make a decision to do something. but they could have done, there were so many ways they could have done it more interestingly.
Yeah.
I liked the Mariah character was like, can he breathe underwater?
Yeah.
I love the way she was saying to Cottonmouth, all right, so you can't shoot him. Well,
what else?
Can you burn him?
Yeah, yeah. Does he burn? Is he crushing
him?
Yeah.
So I think now that we're all talking about Diamondback and the fight with Luke Cage, kind of the ultimate fight of the show, and we're talking about what's bothering with us, something just clicked for me. That I didn't like that fight for the same reasons I didn't like 90% of Batman versus Superman. Two similarly powered,
or the end of Wonder Woman,
or the end of Wonder Woman, right? The just a duke out slugfest, where it's just an endurance test of two people punching each other. No one will ever do it better than they live, and so don't bother doing it.
That's fair.
I kind of feel that I got that same kind of exhaustion from that fight with those two, from like Batman and Superman.
And much like Batman versus Superman, or even in just the Superman movie that was before that,
Dawn of Justice. Man of Steel.
Yeah. you've got a person who goes through an entire arc about protecting his neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and then he starts rampaging through the place that he loves.
Right? And destroying everything. Yeah. Millions and billions of dollars of damage. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys.
Shift
gird
gears.
Your loins. We're going to talk about Iron Fist.
Oh, fuck.
So,
yeah.
Iron Fist, a.k.a. Oh, Danny Rand. Historically, in the comics, Danny Rand is a young child. I'm guessing that the exact age varies, but let's just say 10 is probably around the right age. Who, in a plane crash with his two very wealthy parents, the parents die, and he is adopted by Tibetan monks,
plant people from monks
from Kunlun. No, it's Kunlun, right? It's Kunlun.
Yeah.
And in the show they say Kunlun, and I feel like that is the poster child. Mm-hmm. That pronunciation is the poster child for how fucking wrong this show is.
Isn't that the least of its offenses?
The thing is, like, you'd think so, but it's just like when you're watching the Avatar: The Last Airbender movie and they keep calling him Aang.
That which is,
and you're like, what the fuck? It's
my
Aang.
Kids,
like,
my kids who loved every movie that they saw at that age didn't like Avatar: The Last Airbender. And as they're walking out of the theater, that was one of the things that they were just like,
or
how
like
can you get his name wrong?
Half the pronunciations in the first audio book of Name of the Wind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My
Aeler.
Aeler.
Yeah. A-M. Yeah. So we were.
And yet still. That's the least of its effects.
I'm not even kidding. The first time they said I was in Kunlun, I paused it and I was like, what the fuck? And
that's true.
Because we,
well,
and
the
now that.
The pronunciations are so weird and they and everything that Danny Rand says, he says their full name followed by their title.
Yeah. Every fight Danny Rand has, let me just break it down for this. Every fight goes, time to fight. They're fighting. Oh, wow. They're very evenly matched. Oh, wow. They're exactly evenly matched. Oh, no. The bad guy has gotten one on, Danny Rand, and he's fallen, and no Iron Fist yet, and he's fallen. And then he hears his master's voice, and his sensei is like, oh, Danny Rand, you have to get up and fight. You have to remember who you are. Remember you're the Iron Fist. And then he remembers, and motherfuckers, it's on, and then it's over.
Well, look, you can't spend your chi too early. I mean, you gotta make sure everyone's ready to finish.
And I made that mistake once, but it's just so that all aside, I think we can go around. I am going to start because I'm just brimming with anger and Santorum over this. But the
With Santorum.
I love Danny Rand. I loved Iron Fist. My introduction,
the comics.
The comics.
Yeah.
I loved them. I thought he was the. Kind of DC has Bruce Wayne with his, damaged billionaire, puts his mind to anything and can make it happen kind of thing. And Danny Rand, to me, was kind of that, like, making lemonade out of lemons or whatever and, like, advancing.
He's this happy-go-lucky ascetic that sits at the top of this billion-dollar organization.
Yeah, who kind of doesn't understand how poor people are, and just in the comics, it'll be like someone will be complaining or something is because of money, and his reaction is just, oh, I mean, I've got money. You can have money. Like, it's just this very, I was so excited for this show, and I thought the casting was so great, and everything I saw, I was just so excited. And then the direction, the writing, the acting, and the pacing were so terrible. So terrible that I felt that I had friends at work who are big Marvel fans who thought that I was being hyperbolic when I was like, it's bad. Like, oh, you're just listening to reviews. I'm like, no, I watched half of it. It's bad. It's boring.
We struggled to finish it.
I think everyone did.
I watched the first three episodes in the last episode and called myself done. And I did it.
Mark, you're not even done all the way, right?
No, it's taken me a long time.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, when you invited me back to this, I sat down and started to try and, like, just chew through those episodes. So this is all still, this is fresh hurt, people.
Yeah.
And I think I've got, like, four more to really finish it, but I already know where it's fucking going.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
I'm
do.
I'm not surprised.
Did they do, have they gotten into the hand shit?
Yeah,
a lot?
They have.
With Colleen?
Yeah.
Okay.
And frankly, I'm... Madam
episode
Gal,
10 is where that happens. Yeah.
And all that stuff. I have lots of problems with a lot of the things they're doing with the mythology in this.
So, Tim, let's just, the first question I asked about Luke Cage is, what was your favorite part? What was your least favorite part about Iron Fist?
My least favorite part about Iron Fist was just the fact that when it boils down to it, the story they felt was most compelling to tell was a story about a bunch of rich white people whining about being rich white people.
Right? And how hard it is.
It was like the entire thing was about how hard it is to be rich
and
white.
We're going to lose our company.
Oh, it's going to be so hard. I don't want Danny Rand to come back and take over the company after he's been gone for so long. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I want to see him beat somebody up. And then the problem, okay, second thing I hate. I'm sorry, you got me started. Oh, I get two happened. Because I got to go first. Is whenever they get to a fight scene, they're so fucking boring.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That I just don't give a shit. No. So it's like when they finally after how long get to an actual fight scene, you're like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. Yeah.
I mean, this is the show that they build as their kung fu spectacular.
Yep.
You know, this is the guy who in the comics is the Stephen Strange of kung fu.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
That's his business. Like
in that he also culturally appropriates his powers.
Yeah. In that people are shocked a white boy's doing so well. How's that too?
You know, if I honestly like I think the worst part that I felt about this whole thing was Don Jr. and Ivanka. I just fucking hate those
Yeah, the fucking
two.
Beechums.
Yeah, like it's obvious that they're not interesting characters, so they just make them the sleaziest people they can. Everybody's heel turn is so fucking obvious, and then when people start to have redemption story arcs because they're hitting fucking rock bottom, it's just like, I've had enough of this.
Yeah,
it's not compelling. These aren't interesting people, because at least, you know, with Cottonmouth and with Mariah, you were getting people that were multifaceted. These are just boring rich
you
people.
You couldn't tell Mariah's, you didn't know Mariah's intentions or motivations from the minute you spent 5 minutes with her, which is, I did not, in Iron Fist, 5 minutes with any character, you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I got this.
With the exception of Colleen Wing, maybe.
Yeah.
But maybe. My least favorite part was I could have dealt with uncompelling characters and a rough plot and maybe everything else. I could have suffered through that if it was punctuated with good action.
Yeah.
Like Mark said, he's supposed to be the Stephen Strange of Kung Fu.
Or good acting.
But the action scenes, I think friend of the show Kyle Decker.
Yep.
In one action scene, a 90-second action sequence counted on average more than 3 cuts per second for the length of the action
scene. And I got to give him mad props for sitting there and going frame by frame.
Yeah, I was getting a
sequence.
Snack.
So the quick cuts, the lazy, boring action that's all done with cameras instead of actors and stuntmen, stunt actors, I feel like if there had at least been really good action, I would have been like, you know what, kind of a shit show, but I had fun watching it. Well, I didn't have fun watching it because I got neither.
The reason why I skipped to the last episode. Yeah. Like, I could have watched the rest of it, but I'm like, fuck it. I just don't care.
Honestly, the most fun I had watching it was paying attention to all the costumes they put on the Meacham girl to hide her anorexia, because you could tell from the dresses they were putting on her that they were very much trying to hide the shape of her bones, because her thighs looked like arms. There was literally a point where she was hugging her knees to her chest, and I had to pause it, and I was like, hi, Nick. I know I have body dysmorphia, but her legs look like arms, right? Like, I'm not crazy. And like, it was just painful. And I don't, again, I'm not trying to body shame the actress, but like, it felt so much like her character was just fragile. Every bit about her was fragile. She was constantly on the emotional verge, and she is so pin thin, and her hands were like purple, and just all of this stuff about her just seemed so like totally breakable, and that's boring.
Yeah,
like it's boring that the only women in that show were terrible Meacham girl, who was like everything you don't want to be, and then Colleen Wing,
I wanted to like her so much.
Her fights were the only ones that were at all interesting at first.
It looked like they had any speed to them. Everyone else was doing fights on quaaludes.
I know. The thing, the speed of the fights was really jarring. You're like looking at it and going, Yeah. This is really slow.
Especially after Daredevil.
Yeah.
Like, the fight in Daredevil was like, because Luke Cage has a lot of guns. Too. Luke Cage has a lot of guns, and that's for because he's bulletproof. I get that. But, like, the Daredevil stuff was so fast sometimes that we felt like we missed things. Mm-hmm. And the Iron Fist stuff felt like I was watching rehearsal.
Yeah, it was a pantomime, and it was like one that you were supposed to watch from like 30 feet away because you'd catch the details of them not connecting all the time.
And, I guess I was reading some stuff that the actor who played Danny Rand said that they had hardly any time to practice the fights. And
that's so pathetic. Well, how do you not have the time?
If that's true, then it's like, what the fuck were you doing? Yeah. Well, how can you produce a show called Iron Fist that's supposed to be about the Stephen Strange of Kung Fu and not give yourself enough time to make the fight choreography look good?
Well, and, you know, here's actually one big problem that I'm starting to see with all of the Marvel shows that they're producing for Netflix, and it's starting to become apparent as of the second season of Daredevil for me. They're producing 6 episodes of television across 13.
Oh, yeah. I get that.
And Luke Cage dragged on a little bit, but this one drags on so much that it just feels like they didn't have enough story, so they drug it out as long as they could, and they didn't want to rethink their fight sequences and add more of those, so they just kept the ones that they had and didn't concentrate. They played them down so they can get whatever they were trying to do out of this.
My only counter to your critique, smart as it is that I don't believe Iron Fist had 6 episodes worth of story.
The overarching sense I got, and I went to a private school with a lot of extremely rich people. One of the kids at my school, his dad had I don't remember the exact number, but I know it was more than 20 car garage. They had an indoor swimming pool in their house. His little sister had her own flight of the house with its own kitchen and her own live-in nanny. They were very, very wealthy. This movie to me felt like a rich trust fund kid making a movie and being like, you know what story I'm going to tell? The one no one knows, how hard it is to be super rich and like the struggles that come with so much money that like you never have to think about literally anything except where's my money coming from. And that like there was none of the like Luke Cage had so much heart and so much struggle, whether it was him or all the characters, like, you know, Cottonmouth, like, you know, started at the bottom. Now he's at the top, like all that stuff. The picture of it's Biggie, right? The picture of Biggie with the crown, like so much. You just feel like this guy has scrapped and fought and killed to get where he is.
And then you learn how much he hated to do that.
Exactly.
Yep. How much he didn't want to be that
Mariah
guy.
Too. You feel like she just like she's a black woman in politics, man. You know, she fought, you know, she had to and sacrifice and Luke and all that and the night nurse and everybody. Yep. And then in this, it's just like, here's a bunch of people who literally had their lives handed to them.
Never suffered in their entire fucking life.
No. And even Danny Rand,
he lost his parents, but in the wake of losing his parents, he was adopted by a bunch of monks from another dimension and taught.
Mm-hmm. Who beat the shit out of him and abused him.
No. This gets me to the other thing that the main thing that bothered me, I think, about Iron Fist more than anything else is that Iron Fist is like, people are like, oh, Finn Jones didn't have any affect. He was so like, he was so nothing. He was a blank slate. It's like, sure. Danny Rand is a calm dude. He's Zen. He is Zen. Yep. He's the Iron Fist. Like he gets, that's how you get to be an Iron Weapon. This Danny Rand had PTSD from a plane crash where his parents died, despite the fact that he'd been through 18 years of monk's training and the beatings and the everything else. What he has PTSD about is the plane crash.
I'm gonna make an observation that they could have cut out an episode of Iron Fist just by cutting out the flashbacks to the plane crash.
Yeah,
so it would have been one episode shorter.
And all that stuff, all I could think of was like, here's Danny Rand, you know, being the Iron Fist, being Danny Rand in public, and all of a sudden someone says plane and he's so shaken he can't stand up anymore. That is hashtag not my Danny Rand, man.
The most interesting story that they started throughout the entire series was the question of his sanity that they did at the very beginning of it.
And did it happen?
Yeah. And that could have been something that they could have drawn out for a while and made truly an interesting story arc, but they dropped that shit like a hot fucking rock.
And mm-hmm. and counterpoint, if I can't believe I almost forgot to say this. If they wanted to do an emotionally and mentally fragile, broken, rich white guy superhero in New York comic movie, why didn't they just do fucking Moon Knight?
Yeah, yeah.
Moon Knight would have been on home at home in the Defenders.
He's possessed by an Egyptian god and thinks he has schizophrenia.
No,
he does have schizophrenia.
He has MPD, at least. Yeah. On top of which,
and he's possessed by an Egyptian death god.
Or is he?
Yeah.
It might all be in his head. We don't even, he has no demonstrable power set, but I mean, his power is, you know, training and wealth like Batman and madness.
Does he have demonstrable power set? That's the thing.
He might. It's like, he did punch a ghost to death once. Did he? he's crazy, so he might not
punched have. Punched a ghost to undeath? Wait, shit.
But like, every time the shit kept coming up, I was like, if they wanted to do this story, why didn't they do Moon Knight? If they wanted to do this character, why didn't they do Moon Knight? If they wanted to, like, they could have done that in an interesting way rather than do Danny Rand in a boring way.
When you've got so much more interesting haunted past, you know, former mercenary and everything else that's going on there. So they let us down with their iron fist.
All right, guys, fast question time before we get to five questions. Just going to go rapid fire, and I'm going to start with Nick just to warn you. Fast question. Would you rather watch all of Iron Fist again in one day or be cut all over and jump into the ocean? Nick?
Iron Fist.
Mark?
MST3K style.
Of those, Iron Fist.
Yeah. I would rather be cut all over and jump into the ocean because it would take less time. That won't take 13 hours. Yay! All right. Guys, if you have... Oh, I'm sorry.
I want to say the reason I made that answer is because I'd have to be explained to everybody for the rest of my life where those scars came from.
They don't have to be scars, Tim. You've never had a cut that healed without a scar?
The scars from Iron Fist are on the inside.
Exactly. Show me on the doll where Danny Rand hurt you. Oh, it's everywhere because this movie was... Or this show was fucking garbage.
Yeah.
All right. So it's time for five questions.
Five questions.
And Mark, you were the first person to answer our new five questions, so you have five questions for us.
I do.
All right. Let's hear them.
Shoot.
All right. Well, we're going to start off with a serious one.
All right.
And then we'll get increasingly stupid as this goes on.
Oh, I love it. It sounds like our show.
All right. So cultural appropriation and sensitivity are unavoidable threads in the discussion for these two series here. Mm-hmm. In general, I think they're larger issues and themes within geek media. So where else do you think you've previously struggled with this in some of your other favorite medias?
I certainly, even though we didn't talk about it, obviously, for good reason, when we did our Doctor Strange episode, I struggled with it in Doctor Strange, and I even understand why they did what they did with the Ancient One, but that's an area, that's a particular character where it's a real challenging decision no matter what you make.
Yeah.
But I think that I especially notice when it comes to the fact that there are tons of good Asian actors in Hollywood, and
they're underserved, underrepresented.
And the number of times they could cast an Asian actor in a role for a character that was written as an Asian character and don't is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah,
the first thing that came to mind was Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah,
Ghost in the Shell. The movie was the second anime I ever watched. First was Akira. When I was early teens, I was a super weeaboo, you guys.
I was a rough
anime nerd kid. And I love Ghost in the Shell. I've seen all of Standalone Complex. I've seen the newer kind of almost rebooted or reimagined movies. I have not seen the live action movie yet. I have it on a thumb drive in my house. I could go watch it anytime I want.
And yeah,
I just have not had the interest.
It hasn't even come up.
A lot of it has to do with, I'm just disenfranchised.
Interested.
Interested. I don't know. I'm
disappointed.
I feel like I got dissed.
Disaffected. Yeah.
I can't get over it.
I, for me, I would say I, so this, I like a lot. I love Stephen King. He's my favorite author. He wrote a lot of his books in the 80s. And there's a lot of really racist stuff in those books. But there's a lot of that in geek culture. For example, I had never seen Big Trouble in Little China until this year. Oh, man. And like everyone always talks about how funny it is and all this stuff. And like it was all right. But it was hard for me to get into it because it's so racist in parts. And like, and
whole.
Well, and so like, in I bet when you saw it in the 80s, it didn't feel so racist because we were not as woke as a culture as we're trying to be now. And so just like listening to the audiobook of It and how often the N-word is said in that book.
Epithets for queer folks.
Any of that. And
I'm
it's
listening
like,
to it right now. It's hard.
Yep. And you're like, okay. There's entire chapters where I'm like, I am not comfortable. And
on the drive here to Tim's, I was listening to the It audiobook. And I was rolling through Tim's neighborhood, killing 15 minutes, enjoying the beautiful weather with my windows down, listening to the It audiobook. half a chapter in, I was like, oop, nope, windows up.
Talking
windows
about the black
up.
Spot.
Windows up.
Yeah. So for me, it's a lot of a lot of great geek media happened at a time when we were much less culturally sensitive. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot more racism, which I guess we would call cultural appropriation maybe now to try to be nicer about it. But like, that's what it was. So.
Your darlings are problematic.
A little bit.
Yeah. Totally.
All right. All right. So number two.
Yes.
Who captains the starship of your heart? Any series, cross genre, doesn't matter.
Captain Mal Reynolds. Followed very closely by Captain James Holden from The Expanse.
Oh yeah, so I would say
Mal Reynolds from Firefly is currently in the lead, but Captain James Holden is coming up fast because they are both righteous men who are on the side of good, who have strong principles, who still fuck up a bunch, and especially they fuck up because of their principles. They think they're doing the right thing and they don't have they are only seeing trees, and so they're going to do the right thing for the trees, which fucks the forest. And I think that's something that I can relate to.
Benjamin Sisko.
Ah, you son of a bitch. you son of a bitch.
Nick's got a picture of Benjamin Sisko that looks like he's saying to Tim, fuck you.
Yeah. I'm going to screenshot that so people can see the look that Benjamin Sisko gave Tim.
I love Benjamin Sisko because he's that character, that Star Trek captain that's like...
Is he DS9?
Yeah, yep. He's Deep Space Nine. Yeah. He's the one that's one... When the shit hits the fan, Benjamin Sisko's the one who you know doesn't even think about the rule book for a second. He's just like, this problem
captain
needs to be solved.
Gut.
He is gonna do what the fuck needs to be done.
Yeah.
And he's a single dad and he cares for his kid and he gives a fuck about every member of his crew. He's a great captain and he's a great example. And I love that character.
He's my favorite Starfleet captain, even though he's a commander
and
for more than half the show. Yeah. But I'm gonna say Holden. I just finished the most recent Expanse book. I just finished the sixth book and fucking like I don't want to say anything, but Holden grows in ways that I really appreciate.
Great. Now I know that the lead character doesn't die
for a while.
I really like the way he grows as a character. I love. Mm-hmm. He's a clear example of how you can have all the right intentions and do the ethically right thing, and that is not the right thing for the solar system.
He's like
humanity.
He's like a walking embodiment of the road to hell is paved with good intentions. For sure.
He's the paladin who's like, but no, you stole a loaf of bread. That's a crime.
Yeah.
And is like, wants someone to pay for their crime, even though it was, you know, to feed their starving family at first.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's righteous.
Watch The Expanse on Sci-Fi. Please don't get canceled. Watch The Expanse.
Also read the books.
Now that I'm looking at this one, it feels sort of familiar. I'm going to ask it anyway. What is your favorite imaginary curse or swear?
No, I've never heard that. That's great. My favorite imaginary or like fictional?
It's not imaginary, but the one that I, for whatever reason, have grown to like saying right now, even though I think it's an awful thing to say, but I just... It amuses me the way it rolls off the tongue is son of a whore.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, yeah. Son of a whore.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a prostitute.
Yeah.
I want to make Or being a child of a prostitute, but I still like saying it.
In the King Killer Chronicles, there is a character named Kilvin who is I cannot remember his Ciaru. Yep. He's Ciaru. And he says...
Which is like Scottish kind of, right?
Yeah, kind of.
He's Kaildish. Or, Sealdish,
yeah. And he says, kissed and Krail, which I don't think they ever define.
I think they do, actually, at one point.
But I also very much like, from that same thing, I like to say Lord and Lady, especially at Fest. That's a good one. And Taylu anyway. Taylu anyway. What are we doing here? And I've actually been trying to... It's a little affected, and I kind of don't care, but I've been trying to put those into my vocabulary more than, like, Jesus Christ, or, or oh my God, or you know, Lord above, or anything like that, because that's more Christian, so.
I have to say that at Festival, I enjoy the fact that I can use the word bloody with great abandon, and it doesn't offend anyone, even though it's terrible.
Yeah. Lord and Lady, I am tired. It's just so great, yeah. Yeah.
I spray.
Ah, Taylor and all his angels. What are we doing here?
I've got two. I think Nerf Herder is pretty good, but Glob from Adventure Time.
Oh, sure.
Like, my Glob.
It's 24/10 on my Glob.
What, the name of Glob? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a replacement for God.
It is. Glob is their God, if we can tell.
Scruffy looking.
Nerf Herder is just so good.
Nerf Herder is good.
But oh my Glob.
Especially since it's like, the way she says it is my favorite. Why you stuck up, scruffy looking Nerf Herder? Just like she can't even, like, just, ugh, like, just, it's so, the delivery sells it. Like,
Runner up Smeghead from Red Dwarf.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And rather foul.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's gross.
Yeah. Smeghead's super gross.
All right. So, is there a board or tabletop game that you don't think that you'll ever get tired of playing?
Ooh.
The answer is yes. And now I have to pick one. My go to.
Or rather,
still,
that you don't ever think you'll get tired of playing.
Yeah.
My go to still has been Legendary. I don't get tired of playing.
I knew you'd say that.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking, don't say Legendary. That'll be Tim's.
I could have said another one if I hadn't said it. But Legendary is the one that's like, every time I go to OmegaCon, it's like, Chris VandeKamp will usually be like, Tim, Legendary. And I'm like, fuck yeah. I never get tired of it. There are others, but that's the top one.
Honestly, and this comes after extensive playtesting, I really love Runebound 3rd Edition. Okay. I produced and helped work on the expansion that's coming out, the co-op solo expansion called Unbreakable Bonds, that I can finally talk about. And I played that game to distraction. We played it so much, and I really love it. A runner-up, I would say, would be Star Wars Destiny, just because it's so much fun.
Yeah,
but my only concern with that is I can see myself falling out of that after a few a few cycles, when the meta becomes overwhelming, which is what always happens to me with any competitive game.
I think the competitive and the CCG nature of Destiny might make that the only reason I don't pick Destiny, because I could see myself, I don't know, spending like 3 entire days of a week playing Destiny and not really getting very bored of it if people were patient and constructing decks with me and were into variation and stuff. But what's the name of that, the Racers game that Laurie Richardson introduced to us?
Oh, the real name is Magical Athletes.
Magical Athletes.
Not the name we call it.
Used to call it, yeah. There's this stupid foot race game called Magical Athlete where you bid on a bunch of different
drafts, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played this with you. It is dumb.
But it's so funny.
Oh,
dumb.
Yeah.
Like, if you pick the siren character, anytime you roll a certain number, your siren's call. Your siren call draws all the other characters one step closer to you, whether that's forward or back. If you're the centaur and you go past someone and end on the space in front of them,
you
kick them back a square. But other than that, you're just rolling dice and moving spaces.
Yeah.
It's like competitive dick move Candyland.
That makes sense for you.
Mm-hmm. The dick move that I like a game that does dick move.
Yeah.
Magical athlete is.
If this episode was not about Luke Cage and Iron Fist, I would now be named competitive dick move candy.
The art is super cute.
I don't think that's not wrong.
The art is super cute, and it suffers from some like awkward translation.
It's Korean.
Yeah, it's Korean originally, and it kind of didn't translate super accurately, and that's kind of fun. Sometimes.
Always. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Question five.
I would go with Carcassonne, by the way.
Oh, Carcassonne.
It's just so simple, and you can play with anyone
Love letter.
All the time. Love letter.
Love letter is a good one.
Yeah, I could play love letter.
I mean, I honestly could probably come up with 10 that I'm always up for playing. Yeah.
Seven Wonders. I could play Seven
Wonders. Seven Wonders. I could play Seven Wonders. Yep. I like Seven Wonders a lot.
Anyway.
I could fight with you on that, but I won't.
It is personal preference, so you cannot.
Yes. Fair enough. Or can you?
All right, well, all right, so this one does have a correct answer.
Oh, shit.
All right.
Oh, man.
Hot dog.
Hmm.
Sandwich, not sandwich.
Oh, is a hot dog a sandwich or not a sandwich?
It's a sandwich. It's meat and bread.
No. Then peanut butter and jelly isn't a sandwich?
Peanut butter is a sandwich and jelly is a sandwich.
But it's not meat and bread.
Well, it's protein. It's shit in between bread.
Okay, Tim, is a taco a sandwich?
No, and I'll tell you why. we haven't heard answers from everybody.
Okay.
No.
My answer is a hot dog is not a sandwich. It's a hot dog. It's a thing unto itself.
Well, it's a good thing that Tim and I are correct on this one.
Oh!
The bread is connected. It's not two pieces of bread. It's one piece of bread.
A pita is a sandwich.
A pita is not a sandwich.
What?
A
pita is a sandwich as long as you're filling the pocket. If you're just wrapping it around the end of it, it's not.
What is it then? A wrap?
It's more like a wrap or like a taco at that point.
But a hot dog is wrapped in a bun. You guys are assholes.
But it's not a single piece. It's been split, and I think that's where the definition has to lie on here. You're splitting the bread in some way.
I suppose
what if I make a bologna sandwich, and I'm using a loaf of bread that has not been pre-sliced, I slice a slice off the loaf, and then I slice it down the middle until barely the edge.
You trench it like a Subway sandwich.
And I trench it like a Subway sandwich. Does that mean that because I have not cut all the way through the bread, that it is not a sandwich?
To me, it is the tubular nature of the meat that makes a hot dog a host unto itself. I don't know about Chicago.
Frankfurter sandwich.
I don't know about Chicago over here, but having lived in Chicago for 3 years, I feel the hot dog is a sacred institution that we cannot profane with such a bourgeois label as a sandwich.
Chicago, I completely disagree with you.
What if you take a hot dog and you cut it into
That's your Florida talking.
And you put it in between two slices of bread because you've used a hot
That's
dog.
That's a hot dog sandwich. I have had a hot dog sandwich, and that's when you take a hot dog and you cut it up into slices and put it between two pieces of bread because you're too poor to buy buns.
Very similarly, you can do that on a tortilla.
This is our last podcast.
Exactly.
Okay. So
I can't work with you anymore.
No, Tim and I are on the same mind on this. Hot dogs ain't sandwiches.
No, they are sandwiches.
That's me and I agree. They're wrong. We're right.
You're wrong.
So, okay. Hang on. All right. I really do believe hot dogs are their own separate thing. A host unto themselves. Hot dogs are, and yes, they may have been introduced as the Frankfurter sandwich, but as we know, an artist's intent does not matter for how art is received or interpreted by the audience.
Yeah, there's a dog peeing on the bull girl now.
I'm just saying. I don't think the fact that it was invented like that means.
If a fucking Jimmy John's where they basically cut out, no, Subway, where they cut out, you know, the middle of the sandwich.
They don't do the trench anymore. They don't do that anymore.
Well, when they did the trench, was it not a sandwich?
Now, hold on.
It was a sandwich.
Question, though.
Would it have not been a sandwich? Was it a sandwich as long as they didn't put a hot dog
in it? So what's a corn dog? Is that a sandwich?
No, corn dog.
It's a wiener done in a bun.
A corn dog.
A pronto pup, wiener done in a bun. It's still flour.
A pronto pup is different than a corn dog.
I know it is. I know it is because it's got flour breaded.
Oh, wait, but breading, it's in bread. Is it a sandwich?
Mm.
No, it's a stuffed fry bread.
All right, I eat a hot dog on its own. This happens all the time.
It does.
Have I had a hot dog or not?
You had a hot dog.
Okay,
so
a hot dog in a bun is a hot dog sandwich?
Well, technically, it's a truncation. Yeah, it's an abbreviation.
Oh,
yes.
All right, all right.
You're getting some serious side eye from me, Sherman.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much, Mark. Thank you so much for joining us, even though you're wrong about hot dogs. I really appreciate you're right you guys
about hot
being
dogs.
Here.
I know I'm right about hot dogs.
Give me a five.
You're as wrong about hot dogs as Iron Fist is wrong about action.
Oh, shit, I can't take back. Oh. I apologize for my wife.
You think that Iron Fist was amazing,
you are wrong.
Stop listening to our podcast. No, jeez. I'm kidding. You can leave comments and tell us why, and we will make fun of you. I mean, we'll do it nicely or not, but, you know, voice your opinion.
I know
it's America.
I like Batman versus Superman, and I can forgive that. I'm not sure I can forgive
friend of the show, Ron Bauman.
Yeah. I'm not going to disown Ron because he likes B versus S. But if you liked Iron Fist, we might have to have words.
If you have things to say about Luke Cage or about cultural appropriation, anything we talked about, pacing, we covered a lot of stuff. Please leave comments on our Facebook page or on our website. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Leave us iTunes reviews. You can always follow us on the Patreon and let us know that you are a Patreon subscriber if you send in your answers to our 5 questions. We didn't get to them this episode, but you can see them on our website. Send in your answers to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. Make sure you mention if you are a Patreon supporter so that we can get you to the top of that Patreon list there. Thank you all so much, and we will see you on the flip side in Kun Loon. Danny Rand, use the Iron Fist.
I'm gonna wait.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter @GeeksWithoutGod. Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
You wake up, you're having a fine day, you don't want to break up. As far as you're concerned, you have a great relationship.